Welcome to the Pride of Detroit podcast, PODcast, by Lions fans here, cutting in, cutting out, getting you here through the hot summer months as we plow on through towards the start of football and the return of the Detroit Lions of the NFL. It's what we do, it's who we talk about, and we talk about that and whatever else tickles our fancy. At Pride of Detroit on Twitter, Pride of Detroit on Facebook, PrideDetroit.com. You know where to find us by now. You are listening to Pride of Detroit PODcast. I am Chris Lemieux, the adequate host at Adequate Host. Still need to change that Twitter handle sometime. I've got to be more professional now very, very shortly. That's a lie. Joining us, me, as always, Jeremy Reisman, the fearless leader at Detroit Online. Hello, Jeremy.
How's it going, fellas?
Burning up, and I'm sure someone else is burning up in the great state of Michigan. Ryan Matthews. Back is the motherfucking rock guy. There it is. We got complaints from last time. We did not cut the Limp Bizkit ready to go intro for Ryan there at Ryan underscore POD, and people were very perturbed. They were very distraught.
You were just fulfilling your adequate prophecy.
I told them I wasn't going to have time to drop it.
I think people maybe thought that we had the Eagles running back on the podcast that week.
Har, har, har. It's so hot in Michigan. I'm over this. I can't wait for it to be September.
Toledo's a goddamn swamp right now, I swear.
Summer is the most overrated season.
Ooh, are we going to do a season list cast?
It's going to be a short list cast if we did that. You know what list cast we are doing today? Tight ends. That's right. We are starting our positional list cast today. We do not have a team to interview, but we will very soon. So what's going to happen is probably in the coming weeks, because of all that's going through, we're going to be doubling down. We're going to be doing a lot of list casts, a lot of positional list casts, plus team previews with all the teams that are on the Detroit Lions schedule. And it's going to be a mess, but we got a little bit of news to talk about today. So let's start. So last week we had to cut in, we had to re-release our podcast on Wednesday with updated news about Taylor Decker, the Lions starting left tackle, who had underwent surgery and did not have a timetable really available to him. Now we know more details. It's a torn labrum, and I think we're looking at what, Jeremy, 3 to 6 months?
Yeah, 4 to 6 is what David J. Chow, the doctor from the Chargers who's been kind of banned from the league, sort of, or, you know, disgraced from the league, but he's still a doctor, so he knows.
Yes.
He still knows what a torn labrum is. And, and to give it credit, first of all, let's put it out there. It was Ian Rappaport who has the initial report about a torn labrum. And as far as I know, he's the only one who said that. So he also had the report about, yeah, it was Ebron. If you're talking about the Ebron Achilles thing, yeah, it was Ian Rappaport.
No. Oh, but okay. I meant I wasn't talking about that. Was it Ian or was it Schefter who basically violated hospital confidentiality and posted that one hospital chart that one time?
I think that was Sheffy. Yeah.
Yeah, that was Schefter. Okay.
But I mean, so this torn labrum thing, not official yet, but no one has disputed. I think it was Meinke who said the 4 to 6 month timeline was about what he was hearing from his sources too. So I think it's safe to say that 4 to 6 months is just about an accurate assessment you can get for Taylor Decker right now.
So we're looking at best a mid early season return, probably closer to mid.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's hard to say because shoulder is obviously a pretty damn important part about being an offensive lineman. Mm-hmm. But we also know that Taylor Decker works his ass off at every minute he can. So if there's a guy that can be kind of towards the beginning of that timeline, you'd think it'd be a guy like Decker. What's interesting to me, though, is if you're talking 4 months, he could potentially only miss 4 games. You're talking 6 months. It could be 12 or more games.
So I think late season yeah, or a lost season altogether.
Potentially. But the tricky part for me is beginning of this schedule, pretty rough for the Lions yet again, and he's going to be missing some important games, although not too many divisional games, but the first six games of the season are all NFC teams, and they're all potentially playoff teams. You got the Cardinals, you've got Giants, Falcons, Vikings, that's your one divisional game, Panthers, Saints. Those are all teams that could potentially make the playoffs, I would say. And you lose those games, that's losing not only, you know, conference record is pretty high up there on tiebreakers, and then obviously head-to-head is also very important. So those six games are going to be huge for this team if they're looking to make the playoffs, and missing Decker on those is no small hump to get over.
Ryan?
What?
Got anything to say?
All right, never.
You're basically, you covered all of the bases. What else can I say about Taylor Decker that isn't super depressing?
It really is. We've seen the Lions try to pick up some options here. Taylor Hills was picked up, but he is probably not the answer. He's probably a camp body at this point. There's really no clear-cut answer still for Taylor Decker a week later. No one really has the answer of what's going to happen there. And I mean, at this point, I still think it's probably going to be Joe Dahl.
It seems like the most logical answer, I think, at this point. And the good news is I think we're going to learn a lot more this week. Mandatory minicamp starts on Tuesday, runs through Thursday, and the media is going to be there all 3 days. So we're going to get some answers on who's getting reps where. Yeah, and we're just going to have to kind of see where the Lions are comfortable, if they're comfortable where they're at, or if they go for one of those free agent options. I know one of the options we were talking about last week was that King guy that I can't remember his full name right now, but he announced his retirement. King Dunlap. He announced he retired today, Monday. So yeah, I think the Lions are, at least for the mini camp, just kind of roll with what they got. And if they're not happy, we might see them sign another guy before training camp starts.
What else do we have in the news here? So I mentioned that we're going to be doing our positional list cast today. We're going to be talking about Golden Tate next segment. I think you had one more piece of news here before we move on, though.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're talking a little bit about injuries. Another guy that we haven't seen yet in OTAs because of an injury is Tahir Whitehead. And it had been kind of a curious thing. No one really knew why he was sitting out. We heard that he was excused from practices. It wasn't mandatory anyway, so it doesn't really matter. But now mandatory minicamp starts on Tuesday, and we learn on the precipice that via Dave Perkett, he is dealing with a knee injury. And we don't know the severity of it yet. But we do know via Terrell Austin last week, he said he expects Tahir to be ready by training camp. Not really worried about it, but obviously we need to see what the future is with Tahir because he's also dealing with a position change. He's moving from the Mike to the Will linebacker position. I'm curious. I'm starting to get some weird vibes around this Tahir Whitehead situation. I'm not fully confident he's locked in as a starter right now. Because there's just kind of weird vibe coming, and I certainly don't get the sense that Tyre's going to be with the team next year. This is the last year of his contract. Do you guys sense anything happening with Tahir? Do you think his starting job at Will is up for grabs right now?
I think that starting job is his to lose. I mean, if injury prevents him from not taking the field, then so be it. But I don't see anybody on the roster that could overtake him for that spot.
That is the ultimate question.
Here and now. Definitely not right. In the here and now. Like, Jalen Reaves-Maybin next year for sure, but I think him coming off the shoulder surgery, sure, he might be 100%, but, like, you still have a lot of, like, getting acclimated to the game to happen, you know? And I think that if we notice anything about this organization now with Bob Quinn and this coaching staff in particular with Caldwell, they're going to bring guys along very carefully. Like, I mean, I think Miles Gillibrew probably could have stood to play a lot more than he did last year, but, you know, they brought him along slowly. And Joe Dahl, they didn't even bother, you know, they clearly like him as a player, but they didn't even bother, you know, putting him on the field until they absolutely needed to real late in the season. So that's the only guy that I see on the roster that could potentially take some snaps from Tahir, but I think that he's far and away the best option they have at that position.
I mean, Paul Warlow is the other guy that that needs to be talked about, and I don't think anyone really wants to see him as a starter, but he does kind of have versatility in being both a middle linebacker and an outside linebacker. One thing to also consider, and I don't think it will make a difference in the end, is Lions can save $3.5 million by cutting Tahir if it comes to that. Because, I don't know, to me it looks like it's clear he's not part of the plan, right, in the future. And that doesn't mean that he can be a stopgap guy this last year in his contract, but it's just, I don't know. I like I said, I just feel like I'm picking up some weird vibes here, and it wouldn't completely shock me to see Tahir off the roster by the time the season starts, but at the same time, I don't know what the Lions would do if he wasn't on the roster. Like, we saw last year how desperate they became when injuries hit, and to be releasing a guy like Tahir this early in the offseason seems a little reckless, but, you know, that's kind of what we thought of the Kyle Van Noy move in the middle of the season last year, right? Like, it seemed a little hasty. It seemed like, sure, he wasn't, you know, excelling. He wasn't really improving that much, but Lions had no one behind him, and that only proved out to be even more true, even though the Lions got Josh Bynes back later in the season. So, I don't know. It's tricky.
I think in the case of Whitehead, though, they at least had a contingency plan. Like, they had the Josh Bynes, like, in their back pocket. I don't see anybody else on the roster like this. I think that your feeling, Jeremy, isn't totally unwarranted. I think that, obviously, I don't know if Tahir, if his, I don't see him coming back after this year, considering it's a contract year, and with the knee injuries, and he really is just like a depth guy. I could foresee somebody else maybe overpaying a little bit for him, because I think going back to the Will, he's going to play much better than he did in the middle, but I just don't think they had that plan there at the moment. So I think I do know what would happen if he got cut. We would see basically like the same level of linebacker play as we did last year.
And for what it's worth, Josh Bynes is still a free agent. If the Lions are really, if they decide like Tahir's just not, it's not happening.
Poor Josh Bynes.
All right, let's move on here. We're going to take a quick break, and we come back. Golden Tate said a few things, and he believes quite succinctly that he is basically, quote-unquote, underpaid. His extension's coming up. We're going to talk about it next. And then, coming up in the show, ListCast. First positional ListCast of the year. This is where ListCast began. What's our position? Tight ends. Is a Lion going to show up on the tight ends? We'll see. Stick around.
I said Taylor Hills, by the way, to sabotage you, Chris.
It's Tony Hills, isn't it? I just realized that. This is staying in, by the way.
To prove to people that
to prove your point
that your coworkers are trying to sabotage you now.
That I just that's my whole explanation now is that I absolutely know the first names of some of these no name fucking ass camp bodies, but you are just feeding me bad information.
You wrote
that article too.
Yep.
No.
Pride of Detroit podcast rolls along here. Let's talk some Golden Tate. He has been on the record now. What's Jeremy? I'm sorry. I'm a little confused on the timeline here. So I believe Golden Tate was originally looking at, I'm trying to remember his name. It was Julian Edelman.
Yep.
Julian Edelman got an extension, and I believe his tweet was, quote, "I hope I'm one of the next ones to get extended. Big plays can come in all shapes and forms, huh?" And then I believe he said to someone from the Detroit Free Press, was it Burkett, that he's underpaid?
Right, yeah. So he was at the Sam Martin softball game, and I think a bunch of media were there. And yeah, he said essentially, you know, yes, I'm underpaid. I'm not trying to like stir up anything. I realize it's not quite my turn yet. I still have 2 years on my contract. He said, quote, "I'd love to stay here. I'm having a lot of fun. We have a great foundation. I love where we're going, but we'll see."
So I guess this kind of brings us to a couple of questions then. I guess the first one is, A, do you think Golden Tate is underpaid?
Yes, absolutely. Golden Tate is underpaid. Looking at the 2017 rankings of wide receivers in terms of how much cash they're pulling in. He is not in the top 10. He's not in the top 20. He's way down the list. Way down the list. Like, I mean, he's pulling in as much money this year as Marcus Wheaton. Adam Thielen is making more money than Golden Tate. Robert Woods is making more money than Golden Tate. Like the list goes on. Kenny Britt is getting paid more money than Golden Tate. And I know he signed this offseason, but it's like, there are an awful lot of wide receivers that make a lot more money than Golden Tate does, that definitely should not be. So I totally agree with his assessment of himself being underpaid.
Did you say that?
It's fascinating, too, because when he came in here, it was ostensibly signed as a number two wide receiver, too, right? Like, he came off that Super Bowl year with the Seahawks. He got signed to be number two. And after Calvin Johnson left, they intended him to be number two again. That's why they threw all that money at Marvin Jones. I think arguably we could say, though, he's been number one.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. He's one of, I think, four receivers who's had over 90 or more catches over the last three seasons each. And I think he's hit 1,000 yards, I want to say, three out of his 4 years with Detroit. I mean, yeah, he's been having, you know, number one numbers. He's definitely been underpaid. I just don't know if that's true going forward. Because next year, his cap hits are $8.3 million and $9.3 million. And base salaries of $6 and $7 million. I think that's about what his wheelhouse is now that he's, 29 years old, about to be 30. I think that's about what he's worth in the next 2 years of his contract. So in terms of, like, asking to be above that pay grade, I don't necessarily agree. But I definitely think the Lions did an awesome job getting him on a discounted rate the past 3 years.
Now let me ask then, I guess, is kind of where it... Oh, sorry, Ryan, did you have something to add there, or are you good?
No, I'm good.
Okay. So I guess the question is, you know, he kind of backpedaled on this. He doesn't want a new deal for at least a year or two. But I think, as Pro Football Focus pointed out, he doesn't really have a lot of options. Like, I'm trying to look around here. Like, I mean, obviously kind of hard to see down the road when this kind of extension would be penned in. So he would be in his 30s when we're doing this, but I mean, this is always kind of the weird thing, because we are, of course, a Lions podcast, but I think we lose sight sometimes in just how little information kind of gets generated about the Lions. And I mean, we kind of get, you know, we kind of get tunnel vision just looking at the Lions when it comes to valuing these guys. So I guess when it comes down to it, if, you know, Detroit decides to play hardball with him a little bit, not just to completely piss him off, but, like, you know, maybe gives him only a little more than what he's getting right now and not a lot more. Like, there's not really a lot of options for him anyway. Could you see, like, I mean, he might want to skip town, but do you see a lot of other teams kind of agreeing with his assessment that he's underpaid, that he should be paid, enough to get into a bidding war with him?
I think so. I mean, I think somebody would love to have a player like Golden Tate. Obviously, it depends on which team it is, but I guess my bigger point is that he is so uber valuable to the Lions. Look at where the Lions were after four games. It was no coincidence that the Lions were 1-3. The Bears game happened where there was a miscommunication between him and Stafford. He ends up getting, you know, kind of like quasi benched. Caldwell says it wasn't a benching, but we all know that it was.
Yeah, we all see it.
Right. And the Lions get off to that poor start. When did the Lions offense start hitting on all cylinders? I had to bring it in, but I didn't want to start car talk this early in the podcast, but I had to. You know, the Lions offense is always just at its, it's always at its, like, premium whenever Golden Tate is going, you know, and he's such a spark plug for that offense. And I'm going to keep going with the car analogies, apparently.
Go further into the hood.
This is more than just saying cylinders over and over. So we've advanced car talk officially.
It's taken the next step. But the Lions
next wheel.
The Lions offense takes the next step whenever Golden Tate's going. And I think he's so important in that West Coast offense.
Gear.
They really take it to a whole nother level. Like, their horsepower is just even
I'm trying to help you out here.
Fruitful.
Like, they go four-wheel drive when he's in there.
I'm trying to help you with differential gear, and you guys are just not picking up what I'm putting down.
Well, I'm trying to ignore you and bring it back to how important Golden Tate is. So maybe he's more important to any other team, and he's not as important to any other team than Detroit. But I still think that there would be another team who would overpay for him. Like, the Jets would overpay for him, or the Browns would overpay for him.
Who knows? The Jets are cutting everybody right now, but...
Oh, boy.
I think your point is true in that, and important in that this is a reason for the Lions to get the deal done next offseason before, you know, he enters his final year in the contract. They don't want him to potentially hit free agency like they did with Sue. But... Let's bring this back to what started this whole conversation, and that was the Julian Edelman extension. He only got extended for 2 years for $11 million. And if you look at Julian Edelman's stats, they're very similar to Golden Tate's. So I don't know if Golden Tate is expecting like a huge payday, but what he's getting in these next 2 years is what he should be getting in this extension at most, in my opinion.
You can't compare contracts to the Patriots. You can't, because I don't know how they do it. I don't know how they do what they do. Like, why is Tom Brady so underpaid? Why is Julian Edelman so underpaid? Because I think we can all agree that 2 years, $11 million for Julian Edelman is a steal.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, his base salaries are $3 million this year, $2 million next year, $2 million the next year. He's getting a ton of bonuses and all this stuff. But I'm just saying, you know, if you know, Bob Quinn wants to bring the Patriot away, whatever, blah, blah, blah. No, like,
you did it. You did it, you son of a bitch.
Yeah. He's going to have to find a way to get these sort of good deals in, like they were able to the first 3 years of Golden Tate's contract. And I don't know if it means giving him more guaranteed money, front-loading something. You know, the Lions are going to have a lot more cap space next year because Calvin will be off the books completely and, you know. I mean, it'll obviously depend on what happens with Stafford this offseason, maybe if they extend Ezekiel Ansah this offseason as well. But they should have plenty of room to work with next year. But I don't know if you want to be paying your top two receivers that much when you... I mean, you don't really have... I wouldn't say one of the strongest 1-2 tandems in the league with Tate and Marvin Jones. It's good, but I wouldn't say it's like top 5 or top 10 worth spending top 5 or top 10 money on those two.
But what has been more of a letdown... And I know it's only been 1 year, but I think that they definitely overpaid for Marvin Jones. And they had to, because they wanted to go out and they needed to replace all the targets that went Calvin's way.
Sure.
And I know that they figured they weren't going to do that with just Marvin Jones alone. But for a guy who had some pretty inconsistent production, they overpaid for Marvin Jones in a big way. I definitely think that Golden Tate is without a doubt a number one wide receiver in the NFL. And I think that guys of his caliber and his specific skill set are so unique and so important that I think it's worth paying him.
But his skill set is also so fleeting, right? Like, especially when you get past that dreaded age of 30, like, his speed and agility, that's not something that can last a long time like a big, you know, physical receiver that can kind of continue that thing well into their mid-late 30s, like an Anquan Boldin.
Feels like one of those kind of situations where you almost got to front load the contract, really. So that, like, I mean, just, you know, if he can just get around, like, you know, so you get to those later years with him and you can kind of just cut loose whenever it just starts to not work out.
I bet the Detroit Tigers wish they could do that with Miguel Cabrera. Woof.
Hey, don't say anything bad about Miggy.
Like, I'm sorry.
He's still going to end 300. He always does. Okay, I've got nothing else on Golden Tate. I'm trying to think what else. Like, I mean, like, obviously going into this year, I think this can be a good year for Golden Tate. You know, a lot of this swirling around him, but still, like, he's in a good position. I still don't know what it is with Marvin Jones, but I think at this point we know what Golden Tate is, and that feels really dependable when it comes to this offense.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. He's a key cog, and like, it's clear Jim Bob Cooter has found out a way to use him. It was funny. I was looking back on Ryan was mentioning how Golden Tate was off to a really slow start in 2016, and I had thrown out to Twitter that like Lions fans were ready to trade that guy. They were ready to cut him. They were ready to bench him after that Bears game. And I looked at the numbers, and at the time, Jim Bob Cooter hadn't really found a way. Like, there was a very significant drop-off in Golden Tate's stats after Jim Bob Cooter took over. But after that fifth week, turned it around again. And it's now clear that Golden Tate is the, I would say, focal point of the passing game right now. And maybe that changes with Kenny Golladay and Eric Ebron taking a bigger role. Maybe Marvin Jones picks things up a little bit like he did at the beginning of last year. But I think it's still, like, he's the centerpiece right now in terms of the receiving game, and I don't see that changing right away.
All right, let's take a quick... excuse me.
Take a big swallow first.
Yes. Shut the fuck up. All right, let's take a quick break here, and when we come back, it's time to list cast. Let's do it. Tight ends coming on up.
Two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine.
All right, let's start our list cap. List cast time. That is our theme there. That is our theme music. It is time for the list cast. If you know what the list cast is, it is proprietary software specific to the Pride of Detroit podcast where we rank things. It is a list on a podcast, a list cast. So when we started ListCast way back last year, it was basically on positions in the NFL. Basically, guys we thought who were going to be our 1 to 10 at a given position or role in the NFL in the upcoming season. And it was fun. We had a lot of fun arguments. We had a lot of things wrong, especially me. Most of it was me. We coined a few phrases. What was that, Ryan?
We coined a few phrases that are just based off of players' names, but it's also how you help get your hashtag.
Mm-hmm.
Or your user handle.
Whatever it is. It doesn't matter. Jeremy, we're starting with the tight ends this week. I am led to believe you have our 2016 predictions for top tight ends.
Yes. I feel like too often when people do lists like this, they aren't held accountable for what they did. So let's hold ourselves accountable for our last year's list. And I'm going to go through them real quickly. I'll start with myself. Just run through 1 through 10 real quick. Number 1, Robert Gronkowski. 2, Jordan Reed. 3, Greg Olsen. 4, Travis Kelce. 5, Zach Ertz. 6, Delanie Walker. 7, Jason Witten. 8, Jimmy Graham. 9, Tyler Eifert. 10, Gary Barnage.
Okay, I guess, for the rest of us, is there like anything on there that is kind of out of the ordinary that, like, probably you want to say that one of us did? Because I think for this particular one, I think we all had kind of this more or less the same top 10.
Yeah, everyone obviously had Gronk number 1. Greg Olsen was 2 for everybody else. Trying to see anything really strange in there. Not a whole lot of differences.
Your list sound a little strange. Gary Barnage at 10 and Zach Ertz at 5. I know Ertz was on my list, but I don't think he was that high.
Ertz was 9 on your list.
Okay, well, I've officially jumped off the Ertz bandwagon.
Well, we'll see what I think about him very soon.
Yes.
everyone else is kind of similar. Tight ends aren't all that exciting, but no one had, like, Ebron on his list, on their list or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, like, as much as I think the hype was up on Ebron, no one was really... Like, we weren't really buying it right then and there, right?
Which is kind of weird because Bolden wasn't on the team yet.
Yes.
True.
And there was no Achilles injury. So if there was a time to buy in on Eric Ebron's stock, it was when this list cast came out.
It's a good point.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's get to it then. Who wants to start? So I think the way we're going to do this, we're going to do... Do we want to just do, like, 3 a piece until we hit the top?
See, yeah.
Let's do 3 a piece to start. So, Jeremy, why don't you start 10, 9, 8 All on right. your list?
I think my 10 might be my most controversial pick of my 10 choices, but guy has not taken an NFL snap yet. But I think was probably the steal of the first round. I'm going OJ Howard, number 10 on my list. Tampa Bay Buccaneers. This list, and I think it's important to point out, this list isn't how good we think each player is going to be. It's just talent wise in the next season. So I'm not necessarily sure if OJ Howard is going to put things, you know, put up a huge stat line with the Bucks. But this is a guy who's a well-rounded guy, someone who I think probably should have gone in the top 10. So I'm going to list him at number 10. Number 9, Mr. Eric Ebron made my list. I know everyone says this seemingly every time year right now, but I think this could be a really big year for him. And I mean, let's be honest, last year was kind of a big year for him too. I think he finished 6th or 7th in receptions and like 8th in receiving yards. Potentially even get better this year. And all you heard last year is how much better he was at route running. So I'm excited for him in 2017. And then number 8 is Tyler Eifert. Is this the year that Tyler Eifert finishes a year without getting hurt? Maybe. I have no idea. He'd be higher on my list if he didn't have all these injuries concerns, but I still like him as a player. So number 8.
All right. Can I take this one here? Do you mind, Ryan, for you getting the double duty?
Chris, you be my guest.
I'm going to say right now, I have sold all my Tyler Eifert stock.
It's fair.
This may or may not have something to do that I've converted to a USC Trojan from a Notre Dame Fighting Irish, too. So, number 10 on my list is Eric Ebron, which, I mean, okay, like, we all kind of ridiculed as this was going to be the best year of his life. Can I just read a stat, though? Receiving yards per game, he's still ranked 7th among tight ends.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why I have him 10th, though, is because, like, okay, we can talk about his blocking deficiencies a lot, but I think, like, you know, the drops are easy to focus on, but, like, he's still a very good tight end. He's still a very good receiving tight end. And I think, you know, it's going to be interesting because I think Roberts will poach some red zone opportunities and some red zone stats from him, but I think people still undersell Ebron a little bit. Number 9 is Zach Ertz. I have not sold off my stock on him completely just yet. Not there yet. I'm sorry.
And you can have all 8 of mine. You can have all my Zach Ertz stock. I sell it to you for very cheap, sir.
Okay. He's only number 9 on my list. Number 8, Jason Witten. Still old, still kicking. Still great. Not going to be grabbing all the stats, but I mean, we talked about him on you can go back about a year and listen to our 2016 list cast of tight ends. We extol the virtues of Jason Witten here.
You had him 6th last year for the record, and I had him 7th.
He's getting old. Go ahead, Brian.
All right, I will kick things off with my number 10, who is Eric Ebron. I had to sneak him onto the list. I was potentially thinking that I was going to do it in a way that I could get out ahead of Jeremy by putting a Detroit Lion on my list who would then have a breakout season, but alas, I am not. Number 9 is my guy formerly from San Diego and now in Los Angeles, Hunter Henry. Big fan of the Hunter Henry. I think that he's going to have a breakout season. I thought about putting him even higher than 9 on my list, but I liked how he finished the season. He was really effective in the red zone. At some time, Father Time will come for Antonio Gates, even though he still had 7 touchdown catches last year. They showed a confidence in passing to Henry in the red zone. He had 16 targets and 10 catches for 7 touchdowns. So I like Hunter Henry this year.
I don't have him on mine, but I just want to say I liked him a lot. Like I think I was even on record last year during the draft saying he was probably the best tight end out there.
Yeah, I mean he fell to the second round, but he got snatched up pretty quickly at 35 by the Chargers. Mm-hmm. So they quietly had a pretty good draft last year with their first 2 picks being Bosa and Henry. So,
mm-hmm.
And then my number 8 is OJ Howard. I have him even higher than you do. I mean, this is the thing. Always keep in mind, like you said, this is about you're thinking about the player's talent in a vacuum. So I'm saying that if OJ Howard went to really almost any team in the NFL, I think that he would just be outstanding. It might be a little bit difficult for him in Tampa Bay this year just because Cameron Brate had such a good year last year. So I'm not sure what kind of opportunities he's going to get, but I still think he's going to have a really big year. I'm a big fan of OJ Howard. So,
all right, why don't you double up and do 7, 6, 5? Is that right?
Yeah.
765. Yep. Yeah.
So seven, I had Jordan Reed. I know that he's kind of struggled to stay healthy a little bit, but I still think that he's such a threat as a receiver. It's well documented how he struggles in pass blocking, but I mean, this is a guy who is still such a weapon, really anywhere on the field. He's so good after the catch too. So I really like Jordan Reed. That was my number seven. Number six is Delanie Walker. I'm never going to sell my Delanie Walker stock. I don't care if he turns 38 and he's still in the league. I won't talk about him the same way that I was talking about Antonio Gates earlier.
He blew us up last year.
Yeah, he did. He did do enough to make us look like shams last year. So I love Delanie Walker, especially in the red zone.
What tight end didn't blow up the Lions last year, though?
That's a good point.
That's true, but I feel like of the tight ends that blew up the Lions, Walker did the most damage.
I don't want to remember that Titans game at all.
Zach Miller blew up the Lions too. So,
and who was the Houston one? CJ Fedorics. He's got the weird Polish name.
See, that's the thing, is that you can't even pronounce his name, and it is a weird Polish name, and you should be able to pronounce it, Chris, because you can always pronounce those.
Fedorowicz.
There you go. I'm lost. That was my number six, right?
Yep. Yes. Give us five. Yes, you're done.
Number...
No, wait. He's got five.
Yeah, seven, six, and five. My number five is Jimmy Graham. He had a big bounce back year. I don't even think he made my top 10 last year. I think I kept him off for some reason, or he might have been really low on my list. I don't know. But either way, I think he had a bounce back season, like I said, last year. I'm pretty sure that he's going to play just as well this year. He managed to stay healthy all year, so I think that was the biggest roadblock that he had to overcome. And now that he's got that under his belt, hopefully he can stay healthy, and I think he'll be a big part of that Seattle offense.
Yeah, Jimmy Graham was number eight on your list, which was lowest amongst all of us.
I'm buying back in on Jimmy Graham.
All right, my 765. Let's see here. Number seven, I've got Jordan Reed.
Cool.
Not really everything I wanted out of him last year, but I mean, still very good. I don't know if we said his name yet here. At number six, I have Martellus Bennett. Maybe I'm going a little low on Bennett. Maybe I'm going a little too high. It's kind of hard to tell because I don't want to spoil your guys' list casts. But, I mean, even at number two last year, you could see the potential he had there, even as he kind of gets older. And Green Bay is only going to prop him up. I think overall, maybe not the best. Like, I think overall he is kind of starting to get the edge taken off him at that position, but he's in probably the best spot he can be at his age in Green Bay.
It's a perfect landing spot for him, as much as I hate it.
Yeah. No, like, he's perfect right there, and I'm going to hate him this year, which is sad because I love the Bennett brothers. The Bennett brothers are probably my favorite duo in professional football, and I am just... He's going to catch touchdowns against the Lions, and I'm going to hate it.
Yep.
Number six, no, I'm sorry, number five, I have Jimmy Graham as well. As you say, bounce back year. I think he's still as good as advertised right now. It's just that Seahawks offense. He's just not going to get a ton of time to really, they spread that ball out so much. It just kind of takes that shine off of him.
I mean, it's also... It's just not fair to compare those two offenses. Like, New Orleans offense is so air raid. It's so just throw the ball all over the field. And he was like the focal point of their offense. So that's kind of warped a lot of people's opinions.
Yeah,
about him.
You want anything in like that short to mid range game in that air raid New Orleans ran. It was Jimmy Graham in the driver's seat.
All right, I'll take over from here. Number seven is Zach Ertz. I have not given up on Zach Ertz either. This guy's only 26 years old. Put up 816 yards last year, second best to his 2015 season where he put up 853. This is a guy in a good spot in Philly, I think, with a pretty aggressive offense, pretty decent quarterback, and I just think he is ready to kind of finally pass that 1,000-yard threshold. I think he does it this year with Philly. which would, you know, that could potentially put him top five stats. I don't know if he's really that talented, but I just think he's in a good spot with Philly. Number six, I am also going with Martellus Bennett at number six. This is a guy who's more well-rounded than I think people give him credit for. You know, everyone was just kind of pointing to his stats with the Patriots being a little better, with Gronk being out most of last year. But this is a guy who can block too, and I do think his personality is bleeding a little bit over into my rankings because I love the guy and I love him on Twitter and I love everything he says about social issues and player issues in the NFL. But give me Martellus Bennett on my team to play, and I'm a happy man. And then my number five is Delanie Walker. I think Ryan did a good job talking about him already, but this is a guy who continues to like befuddle me because he's a guy I didn't really believe in last year. I actually had him at six last year, but he had such a long career in San Francisco where he did nothing as a receiver, and suddenly he moves to Tennessee and they figure out exactly how to make it work. And like Ryan said, he's getting up there in age. He's going to be 33 by the time the season starts. So I think if there's a time where he's going to finally kind of fall back to reality, it might be this year. But I have to give credit where credit's due and eat a little crow. Delanie Walker is definitely a prime top 10 tight end in this league right now.
All right. Why don't you do 4-3-2 then?
All right. All the way up to two. Mm-hmm. Number four, Jimmy Graham. I think the Seahawks finally figure out how to use him. Like you guys said, he's never going to be at the level he was with the Saints, but the talent is there. Like, this guy is just a slot receiver. He's barely even a tight end. He's one of the best slot receivers in the league, and I still believe that to be true, even though he's in kind of a run-heavy offense. I don't know what else to say about Jimmy Graham. Everyone knows him, and for good reason.
Do you think the run game in Seattle could change? Like, I mean, they obviously they're without beast mode now, and Thomas Rawls, give or take what you can from him, like they might have to change to a more pass heavy offense.
They did go out and get Eddie Lacy too.
They did get Eddie Lacy though, but that feels more like a reclamation project, to be honest. We'll have to see. Eddie Lacy. He did meet his weight requirement.
Second time, two in a row.
Good on you.
We call that a winning streak. Or a thinning streak.
Where were you at? Were you at four? Or three?
Jimmy Graham was my four. So my number three, Travis Kelce. And I have a feeling some of you guys might have him even higher on your list. But breakout season last year, 1,100 yards. Again, still pretty young at 27 years old. This is a guy who we expected to break out a couple of years before. And I mean, he's had over 800 yards in the past three seasons. So it's not like this is anything new, but I think he took his game to a whole new level in 2016 and it's going to stay there for 2017. And then my number two, Greg Olsen. This is a guy that, like, I think his talent mixes perfectly with the team he's at. The Panthers, he's just excelled three straight seasons with 1,000 yards or more. He's gone five straight years playing every single game, so he's a healthy guy. He's a guy, someone you can rely on. This guy is, you know, I think it's time he starts being in the conversation with, I think, what is still my number one. I don't know if he's still your number one, but we'll get to him later. But Greg Olsen deserves to be Greg Olsen deserves to be in that conversation right now, I think.
All right, so I think I'm up next. All right, I'm going to go, let's see here, at number five. Number four, I have Delanie Walker. I am always about the old man strong in this league. I think the old bastards can still keep up with some of the young pups. And Delanie Walker has got a pretty good quarterback position, I gotta say. Like, I know we're all kind of hemming and hawing when it comes to Marcus Mariota, but he looks good with Mariota still. And I still like where they're going with him. Number three, I have Greg Olsen. I have him a little lower here because the next guy up, I think, is... his star has been rising pretty well. But I think for Olsen, it's hard to tell because Cam Newton had such a bad year last year. Olsen, I still think, is really, really good. But it's going to be interesting to see, I think. Number two, Travis Kelce. Most receiving yards per game last year. what was it, 4 receiving touchdowns. Like, this guy's ready to go, and sooner or later, he's going to have Patrick Mahomes the second throwing to him. Everything else with that, like, there's a lot to love in KC right now. It's a very young, talented team, and I wish them nothing but the best, except against the Lions. So, Travis Kelce is definitely part of that. Ryan, it's up to you, and you get to do your number one on top of it all.
Awesome. I can't wait. Number 4, Martellus Bennett. I have him higher on my list than you guys have them on your list. Shame on you, because I think the dude is so uber talented, and he's going to have just the most amazing season with Aaron Rodgers throwing him the football. Like, there's no more Gronk. There's no more 2 tight end packages. Although, I mean, last year, he was targeted 10 times in the red zone, had 8 catches. He was just absolutely a terror down there. He had 5 touchdowns. So of the 8 balls he caught, 5 of them went for a touchdown. Like, he is... The one underrated thing about him, too, he's a very good pass blocker. He actually finished in the top 15 among tight ends, according to Pro Football Focus. But he had, I think, the 3rd or 4th most snaps as a pass blocker. So, I mean, they really trusted him in New England to serve that role. I think as a pass blocker in Green Bay, they'll teach him how to hold just fine. My number 3 is Greg Olsen. I think Jeremy kind of hit the head on Greg Olsen. He's so uber talented. I think he finished 2nd among tight ends in receiving yards last year. He works for that offense so well. Like, he truly is like their number 1 receiving option. I don't think that you could say anybody else is a bigger option there.
He finished 3rd.
He finished 3rd?
Behind. Yeah, so,
well,
behind
2nd in yards, but I think you're saying 3rd in yards per
receiving
game.
Yards per game. Yep, 3rd in yards per game. Okay. Behind, won't rank them, Kelce and one guy we haven't mentioned yet.
Okay, well, Olsen can stay healthy. That other guy can't. So yeah. That's why I went by total yards. Number 2 on my list is Rob Gronkowski.
Ooh.
Sorry, Rob.
I have a feeling this might happen.
Sorry, Rob. You got to stay healthy. I mean, you are still an eater of worlds, and you're incredible. But the last time you played a full season was, I think, 4 years ago. It's been a while.
I mean, he hasn't played 16 games since 2011. He was in 15 last year. Or, I'm sorry, 2015.
Right, and he did miss one game. Yeah, he did miss one game due to injury last year, too. It wasn't like he just sat out. So, he does have a predisposition to getting injured quite often. So, I'm sorry, but to be the king, you got to be available.
I mean, it's a good point, and it's something I struggled with a little bit with putting him number 1 on my list, which I think, no surprise, I did. Yeah, I mean, he played 8 games last year. He played 15 before that. Only was able to start 10 the year before that, 7 the year before that. It's a concern, and it's probably only going downhill from here. I'm surprised to look at him and still think he's 28, because it seems like he's been dominating this league for a decade. But the injuries mount up, and it doesn't get easier to recover from them as you get older. So I understand you having 2 on your list, but I don't agree.
Yeah, I think we might as well say our ones here. We both, me and Jeremy both have probably, what, Gronkowski number 1?
Yeah.
My justification, though, is wholly that he helped Mojo Rawley win the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royale, though.
I don't know what you're talking about.
That was a work. My number 1 is Travis Kelce. Politics aside, he's an incredible football player.
Does he have bad politics?
Yeah, we're not going to get into him.
I can Google it.
He ranked 3rd in the league in yards after catch. 653 yards after he caught the ball. He had 1125 receiving, which led all tight ends in receiving yards. The 2 guys that he finished behind in yards after catch were Le'Veon Bell and David Johnson. 2 guys that you would probably agree have a lot more athleticism than Travis Kelce. I don't know. The guy is just such a perfect fit. Like, I couldn't imagine a better wide receiver to fit in Kansas City. Now, I know the exercises. Let's think about the player in a vacuum. I think that he could exist anywhere else, but he's just so perfect in Kansas City for what Alex Smith and what Andy Reid is trying to do. It's going to be interesting to see how they're going to have to adjust once Alex Smith gets benched for Patrick Mahomes, though. It's our first positional list cast, guys. We got it done.
We did it.
We did get it done.
We didn't tear each other apart too much.
This is an easy one to kind of get us started up. Once we get into running backs, I think we will...
Somebody will shit the bed.
Someone will have a Jeremy Langford. Yeah.
Are we going to get Wally in on the running backs? Because he got in. That was the only list cast he had last year, is the running backs. And he showed us all up on the Ezekiel Elliott train.
He was. He knocked it out of the park. So Wally may have to reappear for one of these lists. Maybe it might not be running backs. Maybe everybody needs to know Wally's opinions on wide receivers, because I actually talked to him about that the other day. So
that'd be awesome. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Let's take a quick break here, and then it's mailbag time. Time, hashtag ask POD. Before we get into that, we still have a backlog of reviews. Someone was saying that we had missed their reviews too. Just the problem is we're trying to use iTunes to read everything, and now that we've got so many reviews, we're kind of getting shuffled around.
Yeah, and for some reason iTunes doesn't always list them in chronological order. Like, most of them are in chronological order, but then there are some weird ones.
Yeah, we need to write down, like, which ones we've read, but that's a pain, and we're lazy.
And we're going to start with one that I feel like I've read before on the air, but the first sentence proves that that's not true unless they just edited an old review. So, comes from Tom in Macomb. He gives us 5 stars. The title of his review is "Like Butterfingers for Your Ears." He says, "It took the threat of incremental increases in wrestling chat to get me to stop being lazy and write a review. Despite that, this podcast is really great. A highlight of my week. Listcast trademarked, Butterfingers, Rage Corner, Jeff Rieger bashing, We Own the Bears, and more. The host is adequate and probably a Lions fan. Jeremy's puns are underrated. Ryan is hilarious and a calming voice of reason. Alex is around sometimes." Jerry needs to be on more often. This pod is a perfect chaser for Honolulu Blue Kool-Aid. 5 stars.
It's a good way to sign off that review.
We haven't done a Rage Corner in forever either.
That's true. I mean, emotions are pretty low here in the off season, but maybe... Oh, we should have done a Rage Corner on the Calvin Johnson reaction. Why didn't we do that?
I raged via an article.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. We're kind of getting out our ethos, our pathos, whatever, in other places. What's the other review for the week?
Our next review comes from Spooky Dookie 17324. 5 stars. Just amazing! ! Hop on board the Abdul Express and into the Fire Caldwell cabin. This is the podcast for all Lions fans who don't utter same old Lions. List casts are always fun. It's especially good when there is no wrestling talk. Don't add any more seconds of wrestling talk. Africa.
Both a couple of great reviews that sign off with some great one-liners.
It just goes to show you how many, I don't want to call them memes, but how many recurring jokes, let's say, this podcast has spurned.
All right, let's get on to the questions then, shall we? William Gregory asks us, in honor of the finals, who would be the best basketball team made out of Lions players?
That's tough. I feel like we should divide and conquer. I have the power forward.
Who's your center?
Well, the center, we'll do the front court first.
Okay.
For power forward, I would choose Calvin Johnson.
Okay, this is an all-time list. This isn't...
No, yeah, we're doing all-time Lions, because power forward is going to be Calvin Johnson. I know he's only 6'5", but that's just the way the league is trending. And you can't tell me Charles Barkley was any taller than 6'4". So, Calvin Johnson at the 4. Who are we putting at center, Chris? We need a guy who's big.
How tall is A'shaun?
You know what? The height doesn't matter, as long as he's physically imposing.
He is physically imposing. It's A'shaun Robinson.
Opposing players would only attempt to drive the basket once. before running into him.
He's 6'4", so he'll be a little undersized for a center, but we can work with it.
We can work with it, because he's 6'4", 290 pounds.
Something like that. What's his wingspan, too? Good God.
I don't know.
I feel the only other candidate is that Storm Norton guy, who I don't know anything about other than he's like 6'9".
He's going to be our guy off the bench. He's going to be our sixth man.
Sixth man of the year award? Yeah.
Yeah. Who would be the point guard? I feel like Golden Tate would be a good point guard.
I was thinking him for shooting guard.
Oh, that would be good too, to have him as a shooting guard.
Let's put him at the shooter.
Let's put Jace Billingsley at the point then.
Jace? What about Amir? I know he's a little short for basketball, but I kind of view him as like the guy who's going to take it down court.
Maybe, but he doesn't have a nickname like White Lightning.
Point taken.
Jesus.
Small forward, let's put Kenny Golladay, because he's like rangy and big and long and can...
Big hands.
There you go. Big hands.
Really big hands, yep.
Means he can dunk the basketball.
Waybay51 asks us, is there a friendly competition among the staff? Does the staff of POD have any friendly wagers based on some of the disagreements about the Lions and this upcoming season?
We've talked about the backup quarterback thing on here, haven't we?
We have.
Okay.
I don't know if we announced it yet, but there is something inked and signed in blood between Jeremy and Ryan about the backup quarterback position. And if you follow them on Twitter, I think it's there on Twitter. I know that much.
Yeah, you got to do some digging at this point. So if we haven't mentioned it, I think we should refresh it right now.
I'm going to bring everybody up to speed.
Yeah. So Ryan and I have a disagreement on who's going to be the backup quarterback. In 2017, I think it's going to be Jake Rudock. Ryan thinks it's going to be Brad Kaya. What's on stake here is for the first Facebook Live of the season, which is either going to take place on cut day if one of the players are cut, or during week one when one of the players is going to be presumably inactive. The loser, if I lose, I'm going to have to eat a king-size Butterfinger.
With no dipping sauce.
Why would you dip a candy bar?
Because it's a Butterfinger. It needs some sort of liquid to pry that from your teeth.
Whatever.
It does have liquid. It's dipped in a chocolatey.
Good chocolate-ish.
Well, what does Ryan have to do?
Ryan will have to eat... I don't remember the number of mozzarella sticks I said. It's either 4 or 5, I think.
Something like that, yeah. They have to be legit-sized mozzarella sticks, too, right? They can't be, like, baby ones.
Right. And he also gets no dipping sauce. That's pretty bad. I think it's worse than death, but, yeah.
We've had other wagers before, but the problem is whatever we're arguing about is usually resolved, like, as we're arguing about it. So there is pathos, like, immediately.
True, but I agree with the commenter that there needs to be a running bet, and we've talked about it between Reno and Kent about Tease Tabor, because they have very differing opinions on them, but we don't really know what the bar is to set to prove who's right and wrong, but yeah. We'll get back to you guys on that.
Like I don't think Democrats and Republicans disagree nearly as much as Kent and Alex do about Tease Tabor, so something needs to be on the line.
John Whitaker asks us, who's going to win the 2018 Stanley Cup?
Hockey's dead to me.
The Las Vegas Golden Knights in their inaugural season will win the Stanley Cup. I tried to say that like Negrodamus from Chappelle.
Gary Luke, he wants to ask about, do any of us support a soccer team? I think we've answered this before. The short version is, only I do. Gary, you can hit me up. The question I do want to read from him, though, that he has, how is Wally doing?
Yes. Can we get the Wally theme? A special Father's Day edition? We need a Father's Day edition of Where's Wally. Father's Day is coming up.
Hit it. Where's Wally? Where's Wally? Did you say him? Where's Wally?
How is Wally doing? He's not watching soccer. I know that much.
That's all you got?
I'm trying to think the last time I saw Wally. It was actually this past weekend. We had a discussion about wide receivers, and we talked some fantasy football in June. It was a very typical Wally conversation. Jeremy is definitely disappointed in Wally now, so...
I'm taking notes now, man.
I know that Wally is probably going to draft Joe Mixon too high, though. But he did say that Joe Mixon has a lot to prove to him after he, quote, hit a woman in no way a woman should be hit. I don't know what that means, but my dad is definitely against domestic abuse.
Next question I got here from Billy Sims Made Me Do It. Colin Kaepernick's jersey continues to sell. I read he's donating his portion of the sales to charitable causes, while the Players Association and, I guess more notably, in my opinion, the owners are also taking their cut. Does this make you feel some kind of way about the business that is the NFL?
You guys prepared to lose some...
Who got signed today? Was it Ryan Nassib got signed as, like, yeah, the New Orleans backup, was it?
That's right, yeah.
Like, no one here is Andy. No one here is listening to fucking Andy Benoit.
Should we really get into this and lose half our viewers?
Sure, our listeners. If you're fucking with us, they know about the Pride of Detroit vision at this point.
I mean, the business side of the NFL is one of the most gross things and hard for me to reconcile with being an NFL fan. I think the owners are idiots. I think a lot of the things they do are pretty disgusting in terms of player health and player benefits and just all of the things they do is pretty gross to me, but this Kaepernick stuff is really weird and really petty. And
well, I think it's fascinating because we just haven't had a blackball situation in forever, and you have to be very careful about what you call it. Now it's a blackball. It absolutely is a blackball. Like, you can't convince me otherwise at this point.
I mean, the only other blackball in recent history I can think of is Ray Rice, and that's a completely different issue, so it's kind of weird to bring up in the same conversation.
Yeah, I mean...
And, I mean, like, there was also the issue that Ray Rice was done as a running back.
Sure. But that's not the case for Colin Kaepernick. Like, people are signing Austin Davis and Ryan Nassib before they sign Colin Kaepernick. What did the Giants owner say? He said something really stupid. It's like, oh, I get more people calling me, warning me about Colin Kaepernick than anything else. It's like, hey, who the hell is calling an owner of the New York Giants, too? When the hell did the owners actually ever care about what fans ever say about anything except for this particular issue?
Right, and the Giants are the team that decided to keep Josh Brown, that kicker who abused his wife.
Yeah, like, it's just gotten so weird. It's absolutely a blackball situation, and I just think it's remarkable just how much the NFL is showing its ass in doing so, how many people aren't buying it, and yet you always keep seeing still the sports media still insisting, well, there is probably something else going on here. It's like the NFL media is bending over backwards to provide excuses for the league. And no one's doing it worse than Monday Morning Quarterback. Fuck those guys.
Right.
Ryan?
Nothing. Ryan's just, he wants to keep his Twitter followers.
He wants to keep his brand.
No, what? I'm not worried about my brand. Are you kidding me? You guys were just talking about blackballing, and I couldn't help but think about the Kanye lyric.
Is that what's going through your head?
Yeah, it's just such a hypocrisy. Same organization. It's
all you can say at this point, too. Like, this saga has been going on for several months now. I think we are reaching a bit of an exhaustion, but it's just like every day you see some new name that someone's taking over Kaepernick, and you get tired of repeating the same lines.
Well, weren't you guys at least a little bit relieved to hear that he was signing with Seattle? Like, I was hoping that he was going to sign with Seattle. If you want to talk about quarterback profiles, like, I mean, wouldn't Colin Kaepernick fit in case anything were to happen to Russell Wilson? Wouldn't you have to change less of your offense if you had a guy like him in there?
Yeah, absolutely. Duke asks us, would you take a completely healthy Taylor Decker right now if it meant having Rick and Morty canceled forever?
Whoa, wait, hold on. What is the trade-off?
Taylor Decker healthy right now. Rick and Morty is canceled forever.
I'm sorry, Decker. You got to sit out 4 to 6 months, bud.
Yeah, come on. You're canceling the show forever, not just like a season or two?
We're talking about forever. We're talking about no more Rick and Morty. We're talking the last Ever? Episode is Szechuan sauce. Like, I mean, that'd be a great way to go out, but... No, absolutely not. I do not take this. I would go without Taylor Decker for the entire year.
I want a healthy Taylor Decker because I'm not convinced Rick and Morty is ever coming back anyways.
They're drawing it.
Let's see here. Chris Lyles asks us, I'm out of state and considering incurring the wrath of my family by finally attending a Thanksgiving Day game. Is it worth it or overrated?
Wally and I used to make a tradition out of going to Thanksgiving Day games, and they were a lot of fun.
Can you just... I'm going to recommend don't incur your wrath. Just go see your family. Just make sure... Just try to get them to allow you to watch the game on TV there. And there, you can be with your family and watch the football game.
Nah. Nah. Like Ryan, this used to be a tradition for me, and I mean... I still feel a little guilty about it, but it works out perfectly with like the Thanksgiving holiday because you leave early, you go see a football game, and when you get home, dinner is like typically ready for you when you get there.
Yeah, I kind of need more details. Like, is his family like out of town or something? Is that why he has to
maybe
make this trade off or something? Yeah.
Yeah, I guess if you're not going home necessarily to a Thanksgiving dinner, it takes away from it a little bit because you don't get that Thanksgiving Day dinner unless you. I don't know, get it from, like, KFC or something.
Jesus.
Well, I think a great trade-off if they're open would just be to stop in and get a 10-piece from Sweetwater.
There you go. I like that.
If your family serves up fruit salad as a side dish on Thanksgiving, then I would definitely go to...
We gotta do that list cast again. Troy Kilgore asks us, what are your top 5 90s sitcoms?
Yeesh. A mini list cast sounds... Yeah, we're doubling down on list casts, huh? 90s sitcoms. I know what people definitely always... isn't in there is Friends.
Yeah, fuck Friends.
I already know Ryan's 1 and 2. I don't even know my own 1 and 2, but I know Ryan's 1 and 2.
I don't have any because I didn't watch any sitcoms. I just want to say, though, if you want to play a fun game on weird Twitter, search on Twitter for the one where, which is like how the Friends episodes are all titled, right?
Yeah.
And you will just see some very weird, twisted titles. People are basically Friends synopses that people are pitching to each other.
No. Okay. I was going to say, shows don't count as sitcoms.
No, talking sitcoms.
Why don't you do top 3? Just tell me the one that I don't know.
Well, number 1 is Seinfeld.
Yep.
Number 2 is Frasier.
Yep.
Number 3 is probably Third Rock from the Sun.
I was going to have Third Rock from the Sun on my list, too.
I think number 4 would probably be Martin, and then I don't know what number 5 would be without, like, probably taking a deep look. Those are just off the top of my head.
Sitcoms I've never been a huge fan of. Like, the whole multicam thing is pretty well-trodden territory and boring to me, but Seinfeld definitely number 1 with a bullet. I'd never got into Frasier. I also want to get into News Radio because I hear good things about News Radio, but I've never really sat down and watched it. So I might have Third Rock as number 2, which seems ridiculous.
But it's not because Third Rock from the Sun is really good.
I guess. And then, like, I don't know, I might throw like a Family Matters in there. That's mostly based on nostalgia. It probably wouldn't stand up at all, but.
You guys know that if Mike Payton listens to this podcast and he hears that we didn't put Fresh Prince of Bel-Air in there, he would lose his mind.
Look, we're talking 90s here.
He would say, just shoot me.
My number five would be Home Improvement, because you got a rep Detroit.
No.
I was gonna say that's the only sitcom I remember saying, and Tim Allen turned into being apparently a huge piece of shit, so...
Who would have known that the guy who thought male was all about tools and babes and beer turned out to be a weird, gross guy?
Don't be mad about a guy who liked to crack a cold one open with boys.
I think that's a perfect way to end this. Mm-hmm.